Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Hope you're all having a good weekend. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As many of you know, it was a very feel-good win for the Rockets on Friday night in Chicago, 115-94 over the Bulls, and that was with being outscored by 8 in the fourth quarter. Rockets had a 29-point lead after 3, and when you consider that they were actually down 13 early in this game, quite an impressive flip. When you look at individuals, obviously the return of Ryan Anderson, 21 points, 6 of 12 from 3, in just 27 minutes. He was very efficient, didn't show any signs of being limited by the back spasm, so that was tremendous to see after a couple of games that he missed, and you know that if it was possible for him to play against the Spurs or Jazz, he would have loved to have done it. So I think this was a game where it was great to see him back. He led the Rockets in scoring, and well, even when he wasn't scoring, just his sheer gravitational pull, that's the phrase that Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey like to use a lot, was huge for the Rockets in this game. You could see the difference when you had Ryan Anderson as your four, as opposed to Trevor Ariza, Sam Decker, or whoever it may be. James Harden wasn't in scoring champion mode, but that's okay because I think he prefers games like this. Had just 19 points, 6 of 16 shooting, but had 13 assists, 7 rebounds. He was happy to play the role of facilitator and set up his shooters like Ryan Anderson, who, as we said, went 6 of 12. Trevor Ariza was 2 of 4. But one of the best parts about this, as far as I'm concerned, the Rockets won this game against a quality opponent. I'm not going to say the Bulls are great by any stretch, but they're a likely playoff team. And with Dwayne Wade in the lineup, you have to remember this is the team that had the Rockets beaten a month ago in Houston, up 8 with 2 minutes to go, really controlled the vast majority of the second half in that game. So it's a nice statement win for the Rockets, and what made me feel the best about it, the Rockets got it done, even though they shot just 15 of 47 from 3. I know we discussed Ryan shooting well, but as a team, the Rockets really didn't. They were below 32%. Eric Gordon was 2 of 10. Lou Williams was 2 of 7. James Harden was 3 of 9. Pat Beverly was 0 of 3. This certainly was not the Rockets having one of those games where they just shoot 50% and are unstoppable, and yet they were still up 30 after three quarters. And the reason? Well, it speaks to how they buckled down on both ends of the court. In the second and third quarters, the Bulls scored 30 points combined, 16 in the second, 14 in the third. And the unsung heroes, I think it goes back to the veterans, namely Pat Beverly and Trevor Ariza. Pat Beverly had just 3 points, 0 of 4 shooting, yet he was a team best plus 25 in his 29 minutes. Had a couple of blocks, a steal, very energetic all over the court. Then Trevor Ariza, in his 30 minutes, had 11 rebounds. That was the springiest I've seen Trevor in some time. And that's what the Rockets need from him, because Ryan Anderson had just 3 rebounds in 27 minutes. You know Ryan Anderson is not a good rebounder at the 4, especially when he's dealing with these back spasms. So to have a game where Trevor Ariza goes out and grabs 11 rebounds, also acknowledge Pat Beverly's 6 and James Harden's 7, that's the team rebounding approach that the Rockets utilize when they're at their best. And so even playing against a Bulls team with Robin Lopez in the middle, and that on paper looks more physical, the Rockets actually out-rebounded them 54-49. Above all else, I thought it was a really quality character win for the Rockets. In our episode yesterday, I talked to Craig Ackerman, the team's play-by-play guy, and he pointed out that the Rockets had never lost 3 in a row all year. And you could just see, almost from the outset, that the Rockets were just not going to be denied on Friday night. When you look at the energy from the likes of Trevor Ariza, Pat Beverly, and it's the kind of game that makes you feel good going to the playoffs, because it reminds you that the Rockets, even when they're not hitting their threes, they do have another gear in terms of their defense, their rebounding, when they really, really need it. They have that kind of game that they can pull out. Now, it's impossible to do that every game over the course of an 82-game season, but when you have the games more spread out and each game means so much in the playoffs, to me, that's a good sign. When you see the Rockets win, not just the result, but in blowout fashion, and are able to do it without the conventional route of just making a lot of threes. That tells you that when it gets to the playoffs, there might be another level that this team can get to. And the reason I kind of harp on this, a good buddy of mine on Twitter, Forrest Walker, really made me think the other night. It was in the aftermath of the really frustrating Spurs loss, and I know a lot of us were up late just tweeting our frustrations with the officials, the breakdowns late in the game, whatever you want to pin it on. And Forrest on Twitter made the contention that with the way the Rockets play now, the opponent is almost irrelevant. And what he meant by that is when you shoot 50 or so threes in a game, it just comes down to how many do the Rockets make. Because if they're on, if they're making their threes on a given night, it almost doesn't matter who the opponent is. And the flip side is that, well, you also have a lower floor because if you're not making your threes, that lets almost anyone in the game. I think there's a lot of truth in that. However, there are a couple of caveats. First, there are some teams, not many, but a few, like Utah and Miami, as we've discussed a lot this week, that can simply limit the volume of threes the Rockets take because they have those rim protectors, those athletic guys like Rudy Gobert and Hassan Whiteside. The Rockets aren't able to suck the defense in, move the ball around on the perimeter, and so the Rockets only got to take 32 threes on Wednesday night against the Jazz. Now, them making only eight, that sure as hell didn't help, but the bottom line is the Rockets did not get their normal looks. So I think the logic of, well, it's all about how the Rockets shoot, there's some truth in that when the Rockets can get their shots, which they can against 90% of the league, and the Bulls were one of those teams. The Rockets, even though they only made 15, they did get off 47 shots on Friday night. So with Ryan back in the lineup, this was a much more typical Rockets offensive shot chart distribution, let's say. But there are a few teams, not many, but that can simply just take the Rockets out of their offense, and at that point, that logic may not apply. The good news is that when you look at the teams that the Rockets are likely to face in the first round or two of the playoffs, Utah is not really on that list, and I'm not sure if anyone else is really there. You could argue that San Antonio maybe, because they do have a lot of length inside, but I think it's been clear that the Rockets have gotten a decent amount of good threes against San Antonio in their meetings. The other caveat, besides the likes of Utah and Miami that I would throw out there, the Rockets need to be able to grind against teams they are better than. I think Forrest's logic, it's correct when you're playing a team that's comparable to the Rockets in terms of, you know, their overall ability or maybe even a little bit better. Like, for example, when you play San Antonio or Golden State in the playoffs, the Rockets have certain deficiencies on defense because of their personnel. And on the whole, we have a good idea of what the Warriors or Spurs would do to the Rockets on one end of the floor during the series. And it's just a matter of, can the Rockets make enough shots on the other end to offset it and to outscore them? And at that point, it just comes down to the nature of the shooting. Defense, I think, becomes a little less important in that setting. However, you know, that speaks to the ceiling of the Rockets, that if they make enough of those shots, you can compete with anyone and even beat the Warriors four times out of seven, as Daryl Morey has said, is ultimately the goal for this team. Now, the flip side is you don't want to have a floor that is too low, because at that point, you could conceivably lose in the first round and not get your shot at a team like San Antonio or Golden State. And that's where a game like Friday night makes me feel really good. The way the Rockets were able to grind the Bulls, hold them to 30 points in the second and third quarters combined, really, they did not shoot all that well. And it didn't matter. That's how good they were defensively. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and paint the Bulls as a legitimate contender. They're not. But neither are the Memphis Grizzlies, the Oklahoma City Thunder, whoever the Rockets are most likely going to play in that 3-6 matchup in the first round. What you want to see is the Rockets able, even if it's a cold night, to grind out a win when the threes aren't falling. Now, if you've listened to a lot of my shows here on Lockdown Rockets, I've talked in the past that I would actually rather play Memphis than Oklahoma City in the first round based on how those Oklahoma City games have gone. That the Rockets in all three have gone ice cold in the fourth quarter, and that makes me worry about their defensive length and what they can do to the Rockets in a close game. And of course, you also have Russell Westbrook capable of going kamikaze mode at any time. The upside of those games, and maybe I haven't said it enough, is that the Rockets won two of the three. Despite all the ugliness of those fourth quarter games in Oklahoma City, and actually the one in Houston too, in January, the Rockets were able to buckle down, get two of those three wins, and even the one they didn't in November, they had every open shot in the world. All they needed was one to fall, and it didn't. So those are games. Yes, the matchup worries me a little bit in terms of maybe they're another one of those teams. They're not quite to the extent of Utah or Miami. Steven Adams is good, but I don't think he's in the Rudy Gobert or Hassan Whiteside league. But, you know, maybe they can limit the Rockets' volume a little bit. So the theory of it just comes down to the shooting doesn't quite apply. But if it's a team that overall the Rockets have more talent than, you don't want it to be just about the shooting. You want to find a way to dig down deep. And if it's a matter of, you know, scrapping and clawing, getting a stop, getting a loose ball, getting to the free throw line, you want to see the Rockets make those plays. As ugly as it's been, they've done it for the most part against Oklahoma City, and they certainly did it against the Bulls on Friday night in Chicago, holding them to 30 points over those middle two quarters. So to me, that was a real feel-good win when you look at it from the broader picture perspective. Yes, when the Rockets play a team that's as good as them or better, I think in general, Utah being the one exception because of the matchup, it's going to come down to the variance of the Rockets' threes, and you know they have a low floor if they don't hit them because you know a team like San Antonio or Golden State is going to put up a decent amount of points on this defense. There are just certain talent deficiencies that the Rockets can't really make up for at this point. But the Rockets have a high ceiling because of the way they get those threes. If they make enough, they should be able to win or at least compete, go down to the wire. That's true against the big boys, but against teams the Rockets are better than, they need to be able to flip the switch and find other ways to win, and that's what they did against the Bulls. Now, the other big storyline as we chat on this Saturday, that makes me feel good. The other positive today, and it's not a positive, you never wish injury or illness on anyone, but guys, the Warriors and Spurs are going through a tough time. When I saw the Rockets dominate the Bulls last night, the first thing I thought of was the way those same Bulls, literally a week earlier, pretty much controlled the Warriors and beat them. The Thursday night TNT game at United Center, that same building. Then last night, we saw the Warriors with Stephen Curry lose to the Timberwolves. Since the Durant injury, the Warriors have now lost 4 of 6 games. And I know he's supposed to be back at some point. We all understand that, but the question is how efficient he's going to be, how effective. Is he really going to have his full mobility back this year? And even if he does, I think there's going to be an integration period getting him back in the offense because now they're trying to learn to play without him, and it's clearly not going that well. The flip side, look at the Spurs. Kawhi Leonard's going to miss tonight's Spurs-Warriors game. He's in the concussion protocol. And then the bigger news is the heart arrhythmia condition with LaMarcus Aldridge, which has him out indefinitely. Now, first things first, obviously, we wish the best for all of those guys. You hope LaMarcus is okay. You hope Kevin Durant is okay. You hope Kawhi Leonard doesn't have any long-lasting effects from the concussion he suffered in Oklahoma City. This is just a game. This is, you know, the livelihood for these guys. All the best to them. Nothing personal against them. However, from a Rockets perspective, when you see those types of things happening in mid-March, literally a month before the playoffs, you have to be kidding if you don't think that Daryl Morey's eyes are getting bigger when he sees that. It's not a matter of being happy per se, but certainly you have to recognize the opportunity, and that's why the Rockets were so aggressive at the deadline, because there aren't many seasons where you can clearly put yourself in that top tier. In fact, a lot, when you look at the Western Conference, even the last, I would say, decade, it's really tough to distinguish yourself in a clear top three. Lots of times, there's really good 6 or 7 teams. There might be a peak at number one, a clear front runner. But then it's really tough, the tier right behind them, to say, well, we're really there. And then that affects how willing you are to be aggressive at the deadline with moves such as the Lou Williams trade. We'll see if the Rockets are able to land a buyout candidate such as, Omri Caspi wasn't officially bought out, but he would effectively serve the same purpose. We'll see what happens with that in the week or so ahead. But where I'm going with this analysis, in general, you see behind the obvious front runner or two, you see a lot of teams that are close. And so if you're, say, in the Rockets' case at number 3, that sounds good on paper, but in reality, you know that, well, in the playoffs, there's a lot of teams that are really comparable to you. That's how deep the Western Conference usually is. It's not as deep this year. The Rockets saw that, and there's value in being a team that is literally right behind Golden State and maybe behind San Antonio as well, although if you've listened to the show, you know I don't really buy into San Antonio truly being a tier ahead of the Rockets. I'd say they're in the same tier as the Rockets. But now you see these things start to happen. The Durant injury, Stephen Curry struggles, now the physical issues with Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge. This is why, if you are clearly in that second or third best slot, you might want to consider going all in, because all it takes is something funky, and these things do happen. In the playoffs last year, it was Stephen Curry slipping on Giannis Antetokounmpo's sweat at Toyota Center, and if they had drawn a tougher matchup than the Portland Trailblazers, they easily could have gone home in round two. And that was a 73-win team due to the Curry injury. This stuff happens, and that's why when you're the Rockets, you don't want to cheer the injuries, but that's why you are so aggressive. You put yourself in position to capitalize, because this has and will happen throughout the history of the NBA, and right now it looks like the Rockets are poised to take advantage of that. Now, there's still a month to go. Hopefully none of that stuff happens to the Rockets. I'm literally knocking on wood as I say all this, because clearly something could happen to the Rockets. It looked very briefly like something happened to James Harden early in the Chicago game. He turned an ankle, ended up being just fine. As we talked about a lot on this show, James is very durable. He does a ton of stretching work on his ankles, as he said after the game. So hopefully that puts him in a position to withstand that. But yeah, the same thing happened to the Rockets, so you don't want to get arrogant about it. But right now, from what we know, the Warriors and Spurs have issues, and even when those guys come back, there's going to be an integration phase to get them back at the level. Whereas the Rockets, they're fully healthy now, and they're going out and playing good ball. And I guess that's why I'll leave this podcast, because a lot of us were worried after the San Antonio and Utah, was it the schedule, or has something really turned south for this team? And I think all of us, from a logical perspective, we knew that really it was the schedule. We knew this was a six-game hell stretch. And by the way, the Rockets are 3-2, so worst case, they get out and stretch it at 3-3, and there's a good shot at 4-2 if they can beat the Cavs tomorrow night. So you see the Rockets go out against a Bulls team that, while not a contender, is certainly quality. And you see them do it with basically a full cast of characters, everyone healthy. The one question you had, Ryan Anderson, probably looked the best. Led the team in scoring, 21.6-12. It tells you that the Rockets, I know it has not been the most fun week, but, well, the schedule just does not go your way sometimes. Big picture, they are feeling very good about themselves. They're rounding into form, and, well, their chief competitors, they're not. So this is an opportunity. We'll see what happens in the weeks ahead. It's not that the hell stretch is over, because the Cavaliers come to town tomorrow night for a nationally televised showdown on ESPN. But after that, the schedule eases up. You've got the Lakers, then four games against New Orleans and Denver. And so I think there's a real chance in the days and weeks ahead for the Rockets to really build some momentum and some continuity with this lineup. Conveniently, at the same time, their chief rivals, the Warriors and the Spurs, aren't really benefiting that continuity because of the issues they're having off the floor. So on that positive note, I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your Saturday, and, well, get ready for tomorrow night, because it's going to be a fun one. Now, in the meantime, on Saturday, it is going to be a pretty fun slate of NBA games today. Jazz Thunder this afternoon. That's definitely a losable game in Oklahoma City for the Jazz. If that happened, the Rockets' lead for the 3 seed would go back up to 4 games. And then Warriors Spurs tonight. Now, obviously, everyone's out. Leonard and Aldridge for the Spurs with their issues. And then for the Warriors, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, all resting. So it's going to be a B team for both. But in the standings, no matter who's playing, it's still a big deal, because if the Spurs win that game, they actually tie the Warriors in the loss column for the top seed in the West, whereas the Warriors, if they win, go back up to 2 games. So whoever you want to play in the second round, I've seen arguments for both. You should root against that team and want them to lose. Me personally, I would still rather play the Spurs in the second round. I've seen the argument that, well, the Warriors, maybe you want to play them earlier in Kevin Durant's return before he gets back on the flow. I really don't buy that 2 weeks is going to mean that much in terms of the Warriors' performance. By and large, the Warriors are still arguably the most talented team in NBA history when they're healthy. I'd much rather stay on, well, the other side of the bracket from them, play the Spurs in the second round, and we know that all 4 games have gone right down to the wire. It's a coin flip series, and, well, let the Warriors slug it out with the Utah Jazz, and even if the Jazz don't beat them, maybe the Jazz can at least physically wear them down over a long series before potentially playing the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. So that's kind of my view. I'm cheering for the Warriors because I think I would rather play the Spurs in the second round. But regardless, no matter who's playing, I know ABC is disappointed because there are no stars. It's still a big game in terms of the seeding, with direct implications on what the Rockets' playoff path is going to be. Other thing to watch, Cleveland is in Orlando tonight. That's the first of 2 games. What happens with the Cavs? Are they more likely to rest guys in Orlando, or are they more likely to rest guys in Houston? Or will they play them on both ends of the back-to-back? It's not impossible for them to do that, but without Kevin Love, and of course seeing what's going on in Golden State and San Antonio, my guess is it's going to have a lot of teams around the NBA a little skittish, especially a team like Cleveland that knows they're playing for the playoffs. So I'd be a little surprised if LeBron and Kyrie play both ends of the back-to-back. Will it be tonight they sit out, or will it be tomorrow? I don't know, but we'll certainly learn a lot by the approach they take against Orlando. So that's kind of a primer for the stuff to watch the rest of this Saturday. Anyway, much appreciated that to all of you guys for listening. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. You can follow us at Locked On Rockets. You also subscribe to us. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Audio Boom, just search for Locked On Rockets. You can find any of our 150-plus episodes over the last 8 months. Also, don't hesitate to email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Advertising inquiries, questions, suggestions, anything we can do to make this a better show for you, we are happy to hear from you. So for now, go out and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Again, very happy final from Chicago Friday night. Rockets 115, Bulls 94. Everybody's back in Houston now and getting ready for the showdown Sunday night against LeBron James. Well, we'll see if it's against LeBron James, but definitely against LeBron's Cleveland Cavaliers. He will certainly be in the building. Will he be in uniform or in a suit? We'll have to wait and see. But Rockets against the defending champion Cavaliers, nationally televised showdown on ESPN tomorrow night. And, well, we'll be talking with you then here on Locked On Rockets.